Blog Talk Radio.
Chat's here somewhere.
November 5th, 2023. How is everybody doing? Everybody's read the white pages, I'm sure. And, boy, was there a lot of surprises in those white pages, like we thought there might be. But I got the show scheduled for 2 hours, but since we started at 6 for a minute, I don't know if they're going to let me go to 2 hours. It might cut me off at hour and a half. I don't know. But here we go. Scott, right. You're on. And
hey, howdy.
Jesse, you're on.
Good evening.
Melissa and Bob is on. And we got a lot of people on the switchboard. Push 1 if you'd like to join the conversation. And I think this is Carrie. I'm not sure. Carrie, is that you?
Yeah. Hi, everybody.
Oh, I was right. All right. Hi. Hello, sweetie. Okay, guys. Hey. Go ahead.
If you're in the switchboard, please press 1. We would like to hear anybody's opinion that's got one on this. This is important. This is a very important time right now. And that's all I'm going to say. Anybody else got something to say real quick?
You're speaking kind of low. Hold on for a minute, Gene. You're speaking kind of low, Scotty.
I'm speaking low?
Yeah.
Pump it up.
See, I've got my little meter here. Well, do your best. I'll try to pump you up on my mixer. Go ahead.
There you go. A little better yet?
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
All right.
Can I add real quick?
No,
they
Scotty, go ahead.
They do not have to disclose who they are.
Yeah.
They can come on anonymously.
Now, go ahead, Scotty.
That's true.
Roll it.
That's true. So, as we start going through all this stuff, it appears that this is not what they said it was going to be. We've had some, it looks like to me, concessions. I think some things might be a little misleading to people. I mean, I give you some numbers. I mean, we talked about, Sean said that they had success in these contracts. Right. He said he wanted to win back dignity and pride for being UAW. Said he had bare-knuckle clash between workers' class and corporate greed. Fain said we won this round. Said labor needs to get in the fight, in the fighting shape. Well, my question is, how don't you do that first and show us by example, Sean? Because appears by some of these contracts and the language we're looking at across the big three, which was pattern bargain, which you said you wasn't going to do. You went after Ford, who was a little kid on the block, and you picked on him, got that, and that's the cookie cutter mold you brought to us and to Solanas. You said you want to organize other people. They see. We got screwed over by these tentative agreements. Who'd want to organize that? He went with a 4.8-year contract. That's almost 5 years. You could have done the same thing and ended in 3.8, and he had the same time to stop it on 4:30. You know, you struck all three at once when you pattern bargained us. Okay, it's just not right. It kind of reminds me of 2015. That's right. You were the lead negotiator on that one, too, wasn't you, in 2015? Just saying. You know, say you got to fight harder and smarter to do what? It appears to control the membership. You know, you said that we got 4 times what we got in the 2019 contract. Well, 4 times 0, still 0. Right? So, we have performance bonuses have been deleted. Those are on PDF pages 8, 34, and 192. Performance bonus lump sum of 1,000. Performance bonus 4% qualified earnings. And quality performance bonus payment of 500. Coca-Cola, PDF page 38-48, determined by calculating the yes.
And you're referencing this to GM's white pages, correct?
Oh, this is correct. The GM white pages. I'm sorry if everybody's listening. I apologize. We didn't eliminate the tiers. We did eliminate some wage, some tier wage disparity, but there is still something there. They're going to bring the CCA, GMCA subsystems, and Brownstown up to production wages. You cannot strike a GMCH. They have a no-strike clause in this attentive. If it passes, they will not be able to strike. So, anyway, get back where I was at. COLA, look at the COLA on the PDF page 38-48. I'm not real sure how they do this COLA language. It's determined by calculating the prior quarter 3 months average from the current quarter 3 month average, divided by 0.9, then divided by 100. The result will be rounded up to the nearest penny. Example, prior is 12. Anyway, look that up on PDF pages 38-48, and you'll find what the formula we're trying to talk about. Pension PDF page 70. Where are the changes to exhibit A, B, C, D, F, G, and J? There is a writing changes to the whopping $5 pension increase. That's on PDF page 70. Now, they just put up today, I believe, exhibits A, B, C, D, F, G, and J on the UAW web page. So you have to go look at that. It will be there, I believe, I'm looking at it right now, to the left. That wasn't there before. You have a strike settlement. And then below that, or next to that, you'll have your hourly documents for A, B, C, J, D, F, and G. Anyway, so that's, what else is there? Oh, temporary workers, the PDF pages 86-90, converting the full-time temporary, only they have 90 days at ratification. It'll take 9 months for any future hires. And then full-time temporaries will be excluded from life disability programs, sick leave, pensions, and dependent care reimbursement plan or any other GM benefit plan or the program. I'd like to see them for them to define what weeks are, what constitutes a week on an active role. Part-time temporaries, PDF, page 90, will be excluded from sub, legal service, sick leave, dependent care, any benefit plan. I think I already said that. And then GMCH PDF page is 97 through 101. They are going to be considered in progression employees subject to all in progression provisions. GMCH hired prior to October 1899 may flow back as GM traditional. That's before the splits. The national parties of the GM and GMCH may consolidate one or more GMCH operations into another existing GM or GMCH plant and may sell any of the four site operations. No GM production other than skilled trade employees will have the right to flow into the GMCH sites unless there is with excess. I'm going to stop right here real quick because what I'm thinking is if we have access to some of the plants that are local to the GMCH or maybe even within the area hire or extended area hire, if you were laid off as a part-time temporary, could they force you to the GMCH? That's a question I have to ask. UAW has agreed that the employees of GMCH can be made direct employees at GM at GM's discretion and remain subject to the terms of the MOU. And what's the memorandum saying on that? I did not find that and then changes. GM reserves the right to determine whether to lease employees to GMCH in order to maintain GMCH as a distinct entity, and strikes of any kind are prohibited at GMCH. There we go.
Hey, Scott, on that on that would they be forced to transfer? No one's ever forced to transfer. But if they give you a work opportunity and you refuse it, that might end the obligation. That's the way it's got to be checked into as far as the wording. You know, if it's within your area hire, they might very well be able to force you. It's a job opportunity. They don't have to offer you a job. It's up to you to find out where there's a job available for you to transfer to.
Correct. And also, wouldn't it be, let's say there's a move somewhere else, and the possibility is there's a seniority person who wants to transfer that place. Is it possible you could hold the temp, a temp back and let a seniority person go? Also?
No. They're not a temp anymore. You're converting them to
full-time. Right.
So therefore, they have whoever puts in for it first gets it. It goes by the date of your application. They
right,
try to
and then go ahead.
So if they don't tell you, when I transferred to Kansas City, if someone wouldn't have called me and told me Kansas City was taking people, at that time in 3 years I'd have broke seniority. Okay, and I was already laid off a year and a half. GM don't call you and tell you we got a job opportunity. It's up to you to make sure that there's no job opportunity. So you got to put in for a job and you take whatever comes up at that point.
Right.
So all they got to do is not tell people that these temps are going to have no seniority. They don't have the break seniority clause in there. You got to have 5 years in the past before you had a job, unlimited recall rights. I don't believe that's in there anymore, anywhere in the contract. So if they break seniority day for day, GM don't have to recall them in the first place.
Right. And or like I said, so, if they give you a job offer and you don't take it, that's considered a voluntary quit. At least it was.
I believe that language is in there. We just haven't got to it to consolidate it all down. We've been going over those. He and I were up until 2 o'clock last night going through those stuff. And we've been at it all day long today. So I personally do remember reading something to the extent that if they are laid off for 30 days or it might be even 90 days, that does not break their time.
It doesn't matter. It's always been time for time. It's always been in the contract that once you break time, if you're under 5 years seniority, say you got a year seniority and you're laid off for 9 months or for 12 months and one day, GM has no longer an obligation to you to provide you with a job because you've been laid off more time than you've worked. That's because of the old days, some people get laid off for 5 years.
Right.
You're going back a long time, but the simple fact of the matter is that used to be a clause in the contract. Time for time. Once you break time for time, they have no obligation to offer you a job anymore. So these people that are starting out, unless that five-year plan is in there, where then you have unlimited recall rights. So if there's even an extended area higher job in there, they have to offer you a job at that point. If that language isn't in there, there'll be a lot of people breaking time for time. And that's working in the corporation's benefit.
Hear, hear. There's just a lot of stuff going on here. I mean, they made changes to VEBA. They made changes to VEBA, and they also formed a new little tidbit up. Oh, it's called LMC. It stands for Labor Management Committee. They will partner up with the new VEBA committee. And if you look in, I don't have the PDF file with me right now up front. When you look at the VEBA on that, it appears, I'm not sure on this, but it appears that they're going to be paying for training out of the VEBA fund. They're going to pay other things out of the VEBA fund also. And the Labor Management Committee and the new VEBA committee will oversee these as they are doled out. I hope that they're not paying out training out of the VEBA when you have joint funds available.
There was a I thought the way it was put out there it was to be managed like the VEBA fund. I didn't think the money was going to come out of the healthcare retirement aspect of it. I thought that it was going to be a separate entity run like the VEBA program is what I thought I read. Someone highlighted earlier is the way I kind
right.
of read it. I don't know.
I hope that's the case.
There's going to be some tuition assistance and everything.
Right. Yeah, there's quite a few things that are added into that whole thing. You know?
Well, they want to drain that, so they're not responsible for that, too. So they screw our retirees one way or another.
Right. Right. I did not write down the page. It's page number 324. It'll be close to that in the PDF file somewhere, probably farther down. They got a placement in customer care and after sales. And this is an excerpt from the minutes for employee placement subcommittee. During the negotiations, the parties agreed to an exception to the 2008 core non-core agreement to allow any production employees from sites with excess to transfer to job openings at CCA location in accordance with the provision of Appendix A. And like I said, does that constitute that you can move a temp there or some of you consider non-core? If you go back to this language from the 07 contract and core and non-core, if I remember right, non-core is basically anybody who doesn't touch the vehicle, right?
Store truck driver, parts assembly, door line, motor line. The only thing that they consider core in Tennessee is if you're on the frame line and final line.
Wow.
So that's where you have non-core and core, and that's the only plant I'm aware of, a GM that has core, basically, and non-core, and there is a discrepancy in the wages. Now, with all our parts facilities and all these other places, if they're rolling in with the electric batteries and whatnot, that they brought them all up to our wages, did they make the people in Tennessee whole?
Right.
Whether they're core or non-core, because they're doing the same job as the people at my facility. So, you know, that's something they ain't telling you. You ain't going to see plant specific. It's just.
Right. Right. Wow.
I mean, I could maybe make a phone call and get a hold of somebody in Tennessee, and they could ask their chairman or whatever if that's the case, or they need to answer that question, because I know she's making more by going back than her brother does that's worked there for 8 or 10 years, because he's considered, you know, even though he's in a different area of the plant and is hired by GM, he's considered.
Absolutely. There's so much. Excuse me. There is so much here. Yeah, try to read through and sift through and figure out and look at the other stuff. You know, I talked to Leroy McKnight last night, and he did confirm what I thought all along. As of till this contract is ratified, all of our COLA is being diverted to the VEBA. So we did get COLA, just not in our check. It was diverted to the VEBA. So so if COLA comes back to us, herein lies the question. If COLA comes back to us, how are we going to fund
the
VEBA? Right. Exactly.
And another
wait, what did you just say? What did you just say about the retirees?
The retirees used to get a cost of living allowance also.
Yes.
At
the retirees should have got they should have got the cost of living. I agree. More than just $500 one time a year. What I said about the retirees is go ahead.
another thing we discussed earlier, I discussed with even with Jesse, was that if you retired after September 15th, like a lot of people always waited to roll into this contract, okay, because you thought you would have been covered under any agreement made. But since he pulled our agreement, that $50,000 that you would get under the first year if you took the early retirement, you won't get it. And that's, you know, and that, I think he said he even did a little research on that to confirm that, yeah, they're getting screwed. Anything
Bob,
to go
you're
to
saying that, Bob, you're saying this based on the fact when you said pull out so people understand, you're talking about because we, because the president allowed the contracts to expire instead of carry them over.
Work under a contract.
Oh, okay.
If you would have kept us under the international umbrella under that contract, okay, well, we had a legitimate, we didn't have a legal binding agreement at that time. Even though it was expired, we didn't work under the agreement. Since he let it expire, everything that they negotiated after September 15th for anybody that retired after that day, they will not qualify for. It might sound like a small legal glitch, but I'm pretty sure they're getting screwed.
Wow. Should definitely have to check. So what I was referring to with the COLA and the VEBA, real quick, is our COLA diversions have been channeled over to the VEBA fund, the trust. We get COLA back. If we get COLA back, what is funding the VEBA from that point going forward?
VEBA is an independent fund that's working on the cash they had in hand.
What's that? You broke up a little bit.
He's coming.
VEBA,
oh, okay.
VEBA is a fund that they established with the $9 million they put in there. Okay. That is a self-existing fund. It is managed by an outside company. All they're doing with our VEBA, what has VEBA got to do with us? It's strictly a retirement fund for retirees.
Right.
It has nothing to do with us. It's a separate entity now. So, you know
right.
what, if they want to take my pittance of my COLA for the last month and throw it towards VEBA, that don't break my heart. Okay, but, you know, we're talking, I'm sorry to say, chump change. But VEBA should be a separate entity altogether from now on. We shouldn't even be worried about VEBA in this contract.
Right.
VEBA
they incorporated new language around the VEBA committee. You know, they added stuff to this.
Bring money out of it.
And that could be.
That's all it is, because they probably, hopefully, if they manage that fund and there's enough money to pay for tuition assistance, it's saving the corporation money, and they're getting a return on the $9 billion they had invested in it when they filed bankruptcy. Okay?
Right.
So if all these retirees died and they find that they got an excess fund in there, that's a way for them to draw from that fund, because they have more money in it than they believe they need. Otherwise,
I got
you. What happens when every retiree retired is gone? It's going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
Then
the pension
fund. What are they going to do with that
bite
fund?
Your tongue.
Who gets the fund?
Bite your tongue. put it this way. I mean, you got a point. Within the next, I'm going to say 50 years, probably going to be within the next 40 years, most retirees are going to be gone. Gone. General Motors gets to keep the pension fund. And you know, the UAW will get to divvy up, or they'll be able to keep the VEBA fund or use it for something else.
Guy's starting to hurt my feelings.
I'm sorry, Don.
You got me in a box already, and I'm not even dead.
Yeah, you hear
well,
the
you
shovel
live yet? 50, if you live another 50, let me in on your secret, would you?
Don, check the switchboard.
What's that, sir?
Check your switchboard. I think people are pressing one.
Well, I don't see them. Let me go back up. I don't see anybody pushing one. I got everybody that's got their hand up on. So to do it again, folks, if you want on, push one. There's one right here. It's a Skype number.
Yeah. How you doing?
Skype? Well,
how you doing?
How you doing?
I'm doing good tonight. I'm glad I got to be here for the show.
Good.
Myself, I think a lot of this is a lot of bullshit, excuse my language, but I'm getting ready to retire, and I'm concerned about what's going to happen if they go EV and they're not UAW. Because now they're talking about fighting about that, but it's not etched in stone, and that's going to be the next contract. Well, most of us, after I retire, I mean, I'm not going to be able to vote or have anything to do with it. But how long is my pension going to last if they switch over to EV? And they don't unionize the workers, because they're going to need quite a few of them. And I believe that they really didn't do anything for us retired people or people that are going to retire, because they did it for the second tier, second, third tier, whatever, temps. They're going to bring them up to full scale, but what they don't understand is they might not get a pension if they don't get it in the contract. And if they're going to match their 401k, they don't have insurance either, so are they going to spend their life savings on insurance and so on and so forth? Because, I mean, I can't believe that the price of insurance and everything's so crazy. But I'm going to vote no. Probably be the last time I vote, but I don't think that there's a whole bunch in it for us, because when Sean Fain was talking about when Ford was talking about giving back when they, profited, and God knows how many billions they made in the last 12 years, but you should have laid out the 18% that we gave up in the COLA for everybody and then started. Because I'm looking at, they took 18% away from us in 12 years. That would have rolled over into a nice amount of cash. Now we're going to get it back, but then I see that we're only going to get like 7% out of the next a 4.5-year contract?
Yeah. Basically, they brought you back to even is what they did. They took away all that, and they gave it to you right now to break you even with inflation over the last 17 years. You didn't get a raise. You got what you should have been making.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, Brian.
Hi. I didn't know you guys brought me in. I just wanted to make sure.
But I'm just saying that they brought us back to where we should have been. But look at the 12 years or whatever time amount we lost, right? So the retirees and the people that are up there ain't going to get nothing back, because they're going to bring these new hires up to $40 at the end of the contract. But that didn't do nothing for me the last 12 years, because I gave it up so they could stay afloat.
Right. So we had our rollout today, and I asked about the tuition assistance coming out of the VEBA. They told me there's two separate VEBAs. Now,
that's what I,
whether I believe that or not, that just don't make sense to me, that you'd have a VEBA for health care and then one for tuition assistance when the company already covers tuition assistance. So why would it fall? Why would we have a tuition assistance for dependent children under the VEBA? And why would it be a separate entity with the same title?
Can I answer that?
Sure.
At least for GM, on page 226 in the 2019 agreement, that establishment of the trust fund was created, and that was money from the training centers that was converted over into a trust fund. So that fund was established in the last agreement, and it is called, you know, a voluntary employee benefit association trust fund, but it is a separate fund for training, joint training, and tuition assistance, and those, just as the Center for Human Resources was. So that's at least for GM. I'm not sure about the other entities, but when they dissolved the Center for Human Resources, they created that second trust fund for those purposes.
I mean, so, and I believe what you're saying, but if the companies are covering tuition assistance, why would the Viva Trust Fund do the same as well?
Because they dissolved that. When the company was covering tuition assistance, they were doing that through the joint training centers.
Right.
And so they dissolved the joint training centers, and they created this Viva to cover that.
And that's
the,
okay.
Human,
the joint training bond. Expenses.
Yeah, it was the Human Resource Center when they had to close that down.
Yes. They transferred all the money into this trust fund.
Well, Stellantis' training center is still open, from my understanding.
What, the Center for Human Resources?
The training center, I think it's on 9 Mile, somewhere over there, and I don't know if they think that's Warren. And I believe that's the one that Sean Fain recently came from. He was still at that training center before he got elected president. So, but either way, when I look at this tentative agreement,
it sucks.
To me, it's a clawback agreement. We didn't claw back everything. It does not meet the needs of the membership as a whole. It's divisive. It does not get rid of tiers. It does not take care of the retirees. That you know, retirees didn't just lose a $500 bonus. They lost COLA, too. They should have gotten COLA back. I look at the multiplier. The multiplier is not enough. It should have been somewhere between, instead of 5, it should have been somewhere between 10 and 15 on the multiplier. You know, I can understand, you know, kind of turning a blind eye to the pension fund to some extent. But, I mean, even John Deere got a new pension fund, post-97 pension fund. I think that they could have worked out something of the sort to make sure that these people had pensions. But if anything, they should have pushed hard to make sure that they got post-retirement health care. Because even if you got a 401k plan, if you don't have post-retirement health care and you end up getting cancer or something like that, I mean, your whole 401k plan is going to get eaten up by health care costs. Because health care costs keep rising, this is the time to fight to get those things back now, while these companies are making global profits in the billions, and they're being subsidized on a local, state, and federal level through the taxpayers. There is no reason why these companies cannot afford to give the things that we gave up back. And, you know, I get so sick of hearing my union brothers and sisters saying, well, you know, they set the blocks up so we can fight another day. I mean, but you don't know what the economy is going to be like then. You don't know how much health care costs are going to go up then. And, I mean, we don't even know who's going to be president of the UAW then.
Right. The fight is today. The fight is
today.
Yeah,
the fight. Yeah, I mean, stop kicking the can down the road. You know, it's time to get these things today. And I don't know who the other caller was, but I'm in agreement. I'm a no vote. I'm going to stand with the no vote on this.
This was supposed to have been a clawback agreement. They didn't get anything back. All they did was they moved money around. We started with a wage and a pension. Disparagement on this. We started in the hole, and we couldn't even make that right.
And that's the thing. We were giving up things to claw things back. So, I mean, I don't know how we gained anything in this tentative agreement, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it's still divisive. It doesn't get rid of the tiers, and like I said, it didn't do really much for retirees. They're getting a $500 bonus. It's going to be taxed at 42%. Everybody's sitting there focused on the wages and the COLA, But my thing is, so even if you're lucky enough as a temp to get rolled over within 90 days, or even after the fact, if a new person comes in, then it's going to take them 9 months to get rolled over. But, you know, with automation, AI, robotics, and EVs, I really see a lot of layoffs coming after January 1st. I mean,
when you look at
Belvedere. So Belvedere is not going to be retooled and ready to go until 2027. So
I can't
let me get this out real quick. So my thing is with Belvedere, because it's going to take until 2027 to get fully operational. If you're lucky, you only got 52 weeks of subpay and you're on employment. It's not going to last all the way up until they get that plant running. So what's going to happen when you run out of subpay and unemployment?
You transfer or you get screwed like I did for another half a year.
Yeah.
Right.
Or you just don't get called back.
In the words of late Dick Danjan, this contract was done at us, not for us. They created division amongst the membership by using money to do that. We've all seen on the Facebook pages, people are fighting. Oh, you don't deserve that. Or you don't deserve that. And, you know, a lot of times these younger people don't understand. We were already given stuff up before you even hired. We were given stuff up when you were still in middle school.
We're giving up stuff before some of them were born.
Some of them, yeah. Some of them,
well,
you're right.
I mean, you know what, though? What do you expect from negotiators that came out of the administrative caucus? All they know is concessionary contracts.
Good point.
Really think we were going to get what we deserved? I mean, you got the same people sitting there negotiating for your contract that believed you didn't deserve anymore. Until they're gone, nothing special is going to happen.
We were stagnant from the time of the bankruptcy up to 2015. And in 2015's agreement, we got a 6%. 2019, we got a 6%. The inflation has gone up a little bit over 20%. And, you know, what did we get? We got 25% with COLA. And we're not even going to get that until the end of the contract.
I got a solution to this whole problem with the international. I got a total solution. Don't give them a second pension for 6 years of service. Make them serve because they love the job, not because they just want another $3,000 a month. That's how you solve the problem.
I agree.
The thing is, how do you get the delegates on board with that?
Wage. You know what? And that whole delegates is crazy month, too. That is a crazy month because those people don't even have to go back to their membership and tell people how they voted and why they voted.
If they're good, they do.
How many people have saw, as in the last week, people saying, what was the last time UAW went on strike? Brian, I can tell you, 2015. They had a short strike at Chrysler, didn't they?
For four hours.
I said short, and it was short.
Yeah.
I mean, really,
they had the tentative agreement settled. It was all about perception to make it look like we were fighting for something.
That's correct.
What I think.
All these books available for these rollout meetings for leadership, and they're all nice and pretty. How can they do that so quick for leadership from across the country, but we got to wait a year and a half or longer just to get contract books?
If you get them.
I'm just saying.
Right.
The other thing is, Carrie, you spoke about consider where the majority of the negotiators' past experiences come from. Well, also consider if it's fair to say that the majority of those that would be bargaining also have the very benefits that they didn't negotiate for, pension or retirement health care, things of that nature. And a lot of them might even very well have years of service enough that they can retire soon, or they just feel confident that they'll never be back on the shop floor in a setting where they have to put up with the division because of the contracts that get shoved down our throat, because this feels like a push-through contract all the way around.
I mean, it is a push-through contract. They're shoving this contract down our throats, and the membership's falling for the same old crap, putting blind faith in the leadership, and they think this is a good deal because, you know, record profits for record crumbs. So, you know.
The membership, 60% new hires that don't have a pension and healthcare retirees. So what do you think they're going to do when they see $11 an hour thrown in their face? They don't think about the future, and that's the problem. They're worried about themselves. I hear it every day. Oh, I'm going to get hired. I'm going to get a raise. I've been here working alongside of you, and you're making more money than me. And they don't realize I was that way for 3 years.
Can I ask who this is talking? Who is this talking?
Bob.
Bob? Man, you're 100%. I swear we're brothers.
I was there for 3 years as a temp, and I had to work alongside of people with the hope that I would even be made permanent.
You're spot on.
And then when I was made permanent, I was up to scale. I got raises as a temp in accordance with my seniority flow, even though we were temps, we got our raises all along. Okay. And then when we rolled in with a new seniority date, but not a new pay rate. Why don't they go along with that formula? Instead of this bullshit, I can keep you at $21 an hour unlimited. Now it's 3 months, 9 months if you're not, have a year in. So you've already created a tier within a tier. If you don't have a year in right now, you're not going to be converted. If you got 3 months in, you have to wait another 9 months. They're forcing them to wait another 9 months to be rolled in, in which case we all know the economy could change and all of a sudden you don't have a job anymore. But meanwhile, they're getting screwed out of a raise. Why don't they go back to that? Every 3 months you got a raise, or every 6 months as a temp you got a raise until you made it up to it. That would force these companies to shit or get off the pot.
Hear, hear.
Okay. Give them the same incremental raises you would give anybody else to do away with a tier pay system. That way, if you're going to keep temps for 89 days, you're going to keep them 89 days. You can't keep them indefinitely. You can't throw them to 32 hours a week. And when you're rolled in, you're rolled in at your rate. End of story. That does away with one whole tier right there.
I'm just trying to understand why they have two different languages when it comes to temps being rolled over. You got the ones that are going to be rolled over within 90 days, and you got the other ones that are going to be rolled over after 9 months. Why can't they all be rolled over after 90 days?
Because they have a one-year clause in there. You have to be permanent, or you have to be a temp at 40 hours a week for 1 year. These people that have 3 months in have to wait the additional 9 months. They didn't change it. They just sugarcoated it a bit.
Right, and I'm glad you brought that up.
That's why all these facilities laid off their temps at 40 hours a week and put them back to 32. Because once they put them to 32, they screwed them because a lot of them had 3 months in already, and they would only have to wait for 9 months.
Right. And it is very plausible that if you look at this contract, yes, if I bring in a brand new temp, I will bring him in at $21 an hour, but it does not say he's going to go forward from that point. He could stay at 20, or they could stay at $21 for 8 years. Isn't that something? There's no language to tell
people. We got a lot of people on the switchboard. If you'd like to join the conversation, push 1 on your keypad, and it doesn't matter if you're with General Motors, Stellantis, or Ford. You can, you know, join in. Okay, Scott.
The languages are all the same.
You're right there.
You know, some facilities, whether it's you know, Ford's attendance policy is different than Stellantis, and General Motors' attendance policy is different than Stellantis's. For General Motors, for example, if you're under Dock A, they're going to back off the last one. That's it, your last occurrence. Right. L, I think, was it, is it Chrysler? Didn't they clean the whole board, take you back on to zero? Or was that Ford? Brian?
Well, first of all, I've always honored that. I was never on the attendance program.
So with Chrysler, they zero you out, but this is the problem with Chrysler. So Ford got a 6-month rolling. Chrysler has a 12-month rolling, and they combine tardies and absences together.
Wow.
So you're really getting screwed with the Chrysler attendance policy.
Right. Right.
Because there is no separate policy for tardies and absences. Now they're back-to-back. They're intertwined. And if you get in the steps, it's 12 months before they roll off.
And that's at your
right.
boss's discrepancy, because we all know some people can be late all the time, but if the boss, if you're a kiss ass, the boss likes you, he lets you be late.
Right.
And GM is up to 18 months.
Yes, it is. General Motors kept all theirs. It's, I think the third occurrence, you're at 12 months, and then I think after the fourth or the fifth, you are at 18 months on your record.
Wow. And that time excludes any uncompensated time, layoff, leaves of any sort that gets extended. It's not calendar, it's rolling for the attendance policy for GM. So it's if you're not there, the time stops.
Also under that your vacation and your personal time, the personal VR, has to be pre-approved. If you're sick, it had to be pre-approved, so you're screwed on the attendance policy. If you're not, there is no excuse.
Well, not just that. They're going to use 50%. They're going to use 50% of your PA time and vacation time for your FMLA.
Yeah, I saw that, Brian. All this stuff is not even bizarre. I mean, you expect this from the companies. You don't expect it from our once-in-a-lifetime defining moment chance that you actually go backwards in contract negotiations. But
yeah.
It does explain itself with all this divisive language and throwing out a crap ton of carrots in all three of these contracts. And then once you, for highlights, and then once you get into the nitty-gritty of the contract, the white pages across the three, that you realize that what it really looks like, which is the subject of perception, is that we were used as a national campaign for future organizing. That's exactly what it appears to me to be, that we were used as a national campaign for that.
That might be the case, but I'm going to tell you right now, I mean, Toyota already upped their wages. They're not going to unionize. I don't see the UAW getting Volkswagen, Toyota, Honda, or any of these places.
No. They'll increase their wages to keep the union out.
Yep.
They'll
well, let me ask
their
you pops. Something.
Go ahead, Carrie.
I just want to know. Now, when they said we have the right to strike over a plant closing, what if a plant doesn't close and they label it idled? But take all the workers out. Then what?
Well,
as Belvedere.
Right. They said that.
In the GM language, I saw idling is included as a word, though, Carrie.
Right.
Unallocated.
Unallocated is another word we like to use. But they said that they have the right for plants closing, opening, movement of products, and all this. So they have all this stuff covered. If that's the case, then why does GMCH have a no-strike clause? Just a thought.
because they can spin off GM's GM subsystems and IPS. They can spin it off. They can sell it. They can do whatever they want.
That's what it says. It says that the parties will agree upon whatever the fancy word is of making the deal.
Yeah, they just need those votes for ratification. They don't want to tell you the details. I asked about the MOUs. Why ain't that posted on the UAW.org website?
What'd they say?
They don't know.
Because
we know.
They're still working on them. They're still trying to get them hot on those pages. My God,
Why would you have the white book on there and the highlights, but you don't have the MOUs posted on there?
Right, right. Well,
and
we
all know Chuck Browning's got a binder full of them.
Speaking of MOUs, please do me a favor, Brian. Please explain exactly everything about the MOUs for those that are looking at all the carrots that don't understand that there's all this deep language and how the MOUs affect the actual language that you read in the contract.
Well, MOUs are memorandum of understanding. There's a lot of language that hide behind a zipper clause. And so basically these agreements are living agreements. They can change language within the lifetime of this agreement. That's what an MOU is. So you might ratify this agreement now, and it might spell it out this way, but they can come back and look at that particular language and change it.
Interpret it the way they want. And it's also, there's a memorandum of understanding that under certain instances, you can reopen the whole contract.
I mean, that's
And that who in international, because I want everybody to know, who in international has the right to do that?
The executive board and the company.
That's right. That's right.
And the only way you can check memorandums of understanding is in the back of your international handbook when you finally get one.
That's correct.
If you get one, if you're lucky enough. Yeah.
And this is the thing. And so this is the thing. So Sean Fain kept sending the negotiating team and the vice presidents back to the negotiating table over and over and over again. And the company kept saying over and over again, we ain't got no more to give. But every time they went back to the table, they got more. Now all of a sudden, they roll out this bullshit-ass tentative agreement. And now we sucked every penny out of them. You know,
simple,
I believe there's more to
matter. Get. When they took the parts plants and they took the parts suppliers out of us in production, building the vehicles didn't hurt them as much as our parts facilities do, because now you're shutting down the public and the customers. You're going to hurt them because they're waiting for 3 months to get their vehicle. We don't hurt them. They have 60-day supply on hand. So for 60 days of you sitting there, you don't hurt them. But when you say, well, gee, we don't have any alternators. Gee, we don't have any fenders. Gee, we don't have any of this. You'll have to wait for your vehicle that you can't drive. It's a bad perception on the public. And GM, Ford, and Chrysler don't want that because then it hurts future sales.
Well, and I said that. Look, I understand the strategic plan. I didn't understand the criteria for the strike targets. And hitting the Mopar parts distribution and some of these other part suppliers, you know, I didn't understand the concept behind that because you're hurting those that support us. Instead,
and
you kept the big plants open that got the big money makers. You kept them open producing more product, and they already had a 60 to 90-day supply. So, you know, some of those strike targets, they were weak punches, and I think Sean Fain should have came out harder.
Well, you know, they said we've heard this in the past. All of us have heard this in the past. Oh, we left nothing on the table.
It was what's under the table that scares me all the time. Who was jerking who off?
Yeah. Well,
I thought the same thing. Who was drunk under the table? Damn.
you know, we heard this is historic. Historic. Yeah, get the knee pads out, right? No, heard historic. It is historic because here we are with another, it appears another concessionary contract once again. That would be historic. That's like five in a row. That's historic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we gave concessions to claw back what we've lost back in 2008 and
2009. That's an oxymoron, isn't it?
Yep.
History repeating itself.
Hey, real quick. Hey, Don, I'm looking at the time. We got like 4 minutes left in the event that the show cuts off. Can we do another one tomorrow so we can pick up where we leave off if that happens? I know if you're only on a 2-hour window, nobody's going to be able to press 1 after 8 o'clock because the show started at 6, but I know that usually we can keep talking.
Jesse.
Yes,
sir. Do you have a life? Do you have a life?
I do.
Do you?
Hey, I was at the parade with him, Don, and that is one of the most organized. He's one of the most organized people that I've ever met.
Yeah, he sounds like somebody I wouldn't hang around with in school because he'd make me look stupid. Yes.
Well, he was making me look stupid at the parade because I was lost.
Well, that's not what I told him.
I don't know if I want that kind of credit.
Well, I'm just saying, I was like, follow the leader here. Where are we going? Where's it at? You know?
All right.
He kept me on point, though.
Jesse, if we get cut off, we didn't start the show at 6. I canceled it. Hopefully, we can go all the way to 9 o'clock. Right now it says we got 1 hour and 2 minutes. Let's hope they don't cut me off. And if they do cut us off, we will do something for Jesse tomorrow. Okay? At 7 o'clock.
No, it has nothing to do with me.
It's got everything to do with you, Jesse. Everything. It's going to be the Jesse UAW show. And I'm going to put it
in the title. No. No. I might not show up, but I still want to listen to what everybody has to say.
Can I really piggyback? I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, we really love Jesse. We really love Jesse.
We do. Jesse, you're the man. Really, I enjoy the hell out of you. Yes, Jesse, you're right. Or we will do a show tomorrow. I, you're right about that. We need to get this out. Let me get Adrian on. And 919.
I want to piggyback.
Hold on for a minute, please. Hold on for a minute. Adrian, you're on, and 919, you're on. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
Adrian. Good evening.
I want to piggyback on what Scott said when he said this is a historic contract. It's historical because also because not only has a company created division between the rank and file, the union themselves have. You know, they're blaming the traditional workers, you know, on everything that happened in 07 and 08 and on. And, you know, blaming the traditional workers for passing the agreement, which the tiers also voted on and helped pass. So it wasn't just the traditionals. The traditionals started this negotiation with an extreme wage and pension deficit. Extreme. And it was settled for very minimal crumbs for the traditional. And not that the traditional are upset that the tiers are going to be brought up in wages to where they are. They are far from upset from that. But they do think that the top wage should have started extremely higher than what it is. And to have the company contribute 10% to the 401ks, but give the traditionals a $5 per year credit towards their retirement. I mean, that alone is extremely divisive.
You know what a non-starter is? A non-starter is when he said 4.8 years.
I'm talking about the division between the rank and file. And I've seen people even, there was one comment that said, well, you know, the traditionals are living beyond their means. And I'm like, excuse me, the traditional has been a $4 raise, $4, because in 06 they had the $2 COLA, which was ended up taking away. So they were, their pay went back down by $2 an hour.
True.
Okay? So, yeah, $2 an hour in 06, or 03, of the 03 contract. You know, yeah, 2006. And then they took it away when they opened up the contract. They cut it in half, and then they took it totally away. Now, so they've had a $4 increase in 15 years. These people base their lives 15, 20 years ago on what they made then on a 40-hour week. $4 an hour increase has not in any way, shape, or form been able to keep up with their lifestyle that they established then.
Yeah,
so these
well,
people are not living beyond their means.
Like Brian said, it's 20% now. Was what, 4.8 years? I don't know. I thought we'd maybe go back down to 3. That was a non-starter for me. As soon as I heard 4.8, I said, well, the contract's done. We're not going to negotiate
in my,
that.
Yep. In my opinion, they're setting it up for a 5-year contract. They could have set it up for a 3-year contract by doing the 3.8. But in my opinion, they're trying to set it up for a 5-year contract the next time around.
Go ahead, Carrie. I think you're right.
You're right. You're right. Because if you keep pushing this longer, I can understand if you, the timing of the year that you know, you don't want to do it in September, but you could have pushed it back earlier to May for your May Day bananas.
What's
okay?
That?
Yeah. He could have been 3.8.
Gonna,
yeah, much loved.
Yeah. Well, if you're gonna all these this banana bullshit, excuse my language, but if this is the way it's gonna be, and I'm supposed to be working on quote unquote building blocks for the next contract, doesn't it make more sense to take it back to like a less than 4? That May?
Well, Sean expressed out in the open his reasoning behind it, which was May 1st, National Workers' Day, blah, 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 blah. Also, the fact that that's a good time of the year, so you're not freezing cold, standing out on a picket line. But if we just had a 6-week strike and we're seeing what's really going on with these 3 contracts, well, I don't think there's going to be a worry about going on strike in the future to gain anything, because really this is like a money shuffled set of contracts. That's what it appears to be to me. And the bulk of the money is down at the bottom lowest seniority, which is also based on business decisions, will be the first to be eliminated. And there,
yeah.
Again, in my opinion, there is way too much flexibility for
does
the company.
Does anybody have a Kinko's buy them? Where we can get 5 of us together or 10 of us together to actually go through these white pages and put all the simple hard facts on a 5-page thing that we can hand out at this meeting so that all the people that walk in this meeting see how bad they're getting screwed instead of sitting here. I mean, I'm sorry, this is a good platform to talk about this. But unless we put it not just in front of the international when you have the people that decide they're going to show up that this is important, but anybody that does show up sees how important it is, and you give them that so that they can read it in layman's terms to see how bad they're getting screwed before they vote. Because
we are working
unless,
on that.
Unless we can sit there and put it out in black and white in front of these people, they're going to vote yes.
The thing
okay.
is, you already have rollout meetings going on for a lot more going on for Ford and Stellantis right now, just like Brian said he had
mm-hmm.
his today. So it's a little bit maybe too late. We have GM starting to have the rollout meetings this week, depending on the local that you're at, because I did find in at least in GM's contract that it says now, I think in the highlighter or whatever, somewhere it said, it showed that there was no date, but there actually is. It says
the
17th of November, and that the contract would be in effect in full force the Monday following the ratification.
Yep, I heard from my local, so we're one of the last locals at Ford to vote, and I heard that they want it all wrapped up by the 17th of November.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so it's stated in the contract.
There is still time.
That's what the locals are telling.
It's in writing. It's in writing.
Yeah.
So it's whoever's saying that is telling the truth. It's in writing.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling people too out there that need to know that's when they want this wrapped up.
Question.
The word here we're looking at for is incentivized. People are being incentivized to vote for this contract. An incentive is money. You know, just like in 2015, the Tier 2 and Progression workers left on a Monday making this amount. They come back on Monday making $9 more an hour. Who's not going to vote for that? That's life-changing for these people. And the people who negotiate this. Right, and the people who negotiate this know this. That's why this was set up this way, to incentivize these people to pass this contract, hoping that we wouldn't read the white pages or find out what else is hidden that we haven't found out yet, as usual.
Well, let's face the cold, hard facts here. When you're paying someone $18 an hour or whatever, and they're working alongside someone like me making twice as much almost, okay, and you starve them for, say, some of them for 14 months at this rate, okay, what do you think they're going to vote? You know, they've been sitting there. I have people tell me all the time, I don't know how much longer I can work here when I can work somewhere else making more right off the bat. But I want the future that GM offers me. Well, I can't sit there and look at them and say, well, I can't blame them for wanting what I have. But they sell a false hope. They'll never have what I have.
Correct.
Well, Bob, have you had somebody look you in the face and say this to you? Well, you people are the reason why we are in the position we're in. You people. I said, who's you people?
Yeah, and
you know what I tell them?
You know what I tell them when they say that you people gave up everything? You know what I tell them? You wouldn't have a job if we didn't, because GM and Chrysler, because Ford leveraged the whole company and didn't take the loan because they leveraged the whole company. Okay, if we wouldn't have made concessions, GM and Chrysler would have been two totally different companies, and you wouldn't even have had a chance to get a job here. So shut the blank up.
Yeah. Well, see, they don't understand that because they weren't
because
working
they
there
around.
When all that shit was hitting the fan.
So you got.
I have a question.
Every once in a while, you got to slap a child.
I got a question for Adrian and Carrie for Ford. It's going to be the same question, but also for Brian, since you're from Stellantis. So, with the part-time temporary language, did any of you guys read it? And does it specify, since there was pattern bargaining across the three, does it specify that temps hired in after the ratification of this contract, part-time temps, that they will start at $21 and just like the previous 2019 contract, that they will not ever see an increase throughout their time as a part-time temp? Because GM, it's $21 an hour for a part-time temp. There's no language on how many part-time temps they can bring in, and there's no language on how long they can keep a part-time temp a temp.
Correct.
Okay, I'm saying that for GM, but I'm asking this to Adrian and Carrie, if you guys have read any of the Ford tentative agreement language around temps, as well as you, Brian, for Stellantis.
Well, I read the language on all three companies. Unfortunately, I'm getting a lot of the language mixed up in my head right now. if I recall with Stellantis, they can't go past 10% for facility on temps. So I think it's capped off at 10%. As far as their wages, yeah, they do start off at 21. As far as them going any further, that I can't recall.
Okay.
The language when it pertains to us traditional workers stated that every two of us that retired, they would have to replace us with a new hire. Did they take that language out?
Well, they never put it in there.
Yes, it was in there.
Yeah, they did. At one time they did, at least for GM, but I don't know as though they honored it. Just like there was in past language, there was a percentage of for X number of traditional workers retire that you would bring up a tier two to traditional.
That's how it was presented when the shit was hitting the fan in 07 and 08, is they were saying, we're gonna bring these people up when one of you guys retires.
They did,
we got to keep these people, we got to keep these plants open or working. So we're going to have to, or they're going to shut our plant down, right?
Well, let me say this.
But there was people that voted yes.
I want to remind people, these GM and Stellantis did not file bankruptcy because of labor costs. We were only 6 to 7% of labor costs at the time of the bankruptcy. The reason they filed bankruptcy is because accounting practices and mismanagement. And
right.
unfortunately, when Bush was bailing out the banks and bailing out these companies, and then Biden got in there, Obama. Was basically riding Bush's coattails, bailing them out, and then we got stipulations that we couldn't strike and that we had to take these concessions. Even though it was mismanagement and accounting practices that put us in the position that we were, because even when these companies filed bankruptcy, the CEOs were still walking away with bonuses even though they failed these companies. So we got screwed, and we got played. And we continue to get played to this very day. I'm telling you, if we don't fight to get these things back now, we're not going to get those things back in the next contract.
I agree with you 100%. The writing's on the wall. The writing was on the wall. I even saw it in 2015 after reading our contract. I knew that we were going to strike. I didn't know how it was going to play out in 2019. I still believe that was directly a political strike to take away the attention from the corruption that came down. I think that was a last-minute decision to divert attention from not just the media but from the workers. And I also knew that we were going to strike in 2023, and it would be a substantial strike. What I didn't know and never saw coming was the one member, one vote, direct elections. That's what I didn't see ahead of time. But the elements, all elements, and we've talked about this before, and you've talked about a lot too, Brian, all the elements are in our favor now. And the way I see these tentative agreements rolled out, I would almost think that we had better contracts before, because all this is a money shuffle.
I've never seen so much bullshit in the white pages in previous agreements that change our language so much to screw us in a roundabout way. Okay, I saw more paragraphs being amended in this damn thing than I've ever seen in any contract in history.
Yeah.
And we think we're getting a good deal? If it would have been
a lot
of paragraphs, it has changed.
And that's the thing. Sean Fain said we're the highest authority. If we're the highest authority, that means we can vote this tentative agreement down, send them back to the table, because I know we can squeeze out some more, and if the companies don't agree to give us what our demands are, then Sean Fain needs to call everybody out, because the fact is everybody – hold on. Everybody keeps talking about arbitration. The reality of Biden bringing an empire in is slim to none, because he knows if he screws us like the railroaders, He's going to lose any support from the union during the next election. So I think this is the time to do it now.
The problem is you already have Ford and Chrysler with their votes underway, and half of the votes have already been bought with the carrots. Okay, yeah. Ford's already passed it. They make sure they put it out there that it was passed 80 and 90%, 81% mm-hmm. by the people on the floor, 90% by skilled trades in the largest plant that went on strike in Kentucky. Okay, so they're already paving the way to jam this down our throat. GM can vote it down all they want, and you're not going to take all three out.
And okay, but even when you look at bank votes, so when you look at 2015, who voted the contract down? It was Chrysler, right? So
right.
If Chrysler and General Motors were to vote these contracts down, we could still get more.
Right,
I mean,
good,
Ford
yeah. didn't have voted down because I was at one of them. The problem is it's a complete amount of votes. If you have a plant that's got 8,000 workers and that vote yes, 80 to 90%, and you got plants that are all 250 workers, 400 workers, we can't compete with a plant that's got 8,500 people or 10,000 people like Arlington. The votes are bought at that point. Biggest comment I says, I was on strike for the last 5 weeks. I'm ready to get back to work, and I'm getting ready to retire. The hell with it. You know, I'm voting yes because I'm getting this. Okay. When you have large facilities that vote the contract in that weren't informed or weren't as educated as we are trying to be, okay, you start fighting an uphill battle. The shop chairman go to their locals, and it's their job to sell this bullshit. They don't sit there. Have you ever seen them turn one down when it goes to your representatives before they bring it to the locals? I've never seen them tell the international, this contract sucks. I ain't bringing this to my people.
That's red flag number one. The other red flag is the fact that Stellantis and General Motors that made the majority of the profits more than Ford, those two companies agreed to this tentative agreement. That's another red flag. And the other red flag is the fact that these companies decided that they're going to reimburse us for being out on strike. That's the third red flag.
Yeah.
That's because they were told by the president of our international not to deviate from the economics package of Ford, and I do have proof, but I'm not going to put it out there until I'm given a call to ask me why I have that proof.
Well, you already put the proof out there, so give it
out. Yeah. I mean, it came from a negotiator that they were told not to deviate. Now, and that's one of the things that I was going to ask everybody is, pattern bargaining is a template. When a company reaches a tentative agreement, but you still have open negotiations going on with the other two for pattern bargaining, why is it that if you're told you can't deviate, that's tying the hands of the negotiators, but yet at the delegate convention, putting ending tiers in the Constitution was knocked down so it wouldn't bind up the negotiations to hold our bargaining committee's hands tied as far as trying to negotiate to actually end tiers. So the president, according to the negotiator, the president said do not deviate from Ford's economic offers. So that's already pre-planned that it wasn't necessarily pattern bargaining. It was Ford settled, and this is you're not going to negotiate any further.
But they're not even done negotiating. They're still negotiating the terms of these battery plants. So how are we ratifying a tentative agreement that they ain't even finished the terms of the battery agreement or the battery plants?
Right, right.
When we look at the pattern bargaining, they're not deviate from the amount that Ford offered. Is a 23% or whatever, the cash flow available. If you listen to what Mr. Fain said, he stated We've done more work in our subcommittees, and we've went to the table and pounded them at the subcommittees. That was the only place where they were given any leeway, was to get this bullshit change in language. And how did it change? In a lot of ways, it changed to our disadvantage, unfortunately. But that's where underlying money, that's whatever shifted, and it's not part of your percentage-based pay and whatnot, and towards your new hires, okay, they were given a percentage they could play with. And you don't think the corporation didn't say, well, we'll go in between 21 and 23% depending on how the subcommittees go. They were given an amount that they could play with. That was all it was.
Yep. Yep.
The Friday live that President Payne did before the following week when Ford reached the tentative agreement with the UAW, we all heard it. There is more these companies can give, and at that time, all three were in agreement to 23% wage increase over the life of the agreement, and we all know, those of us talking on the show know, that it was raised 2%, and it took 5 days for a tentative agreement to be reached. 2% doesn't sound like the confidence of they have more to give, and you increase one thing by 2%. The other thing that's come to mind is how quickly the other two companies came to the agreement of towards the tentative agreement, and what I kind of am wondering myself is the strike agreement language being on a separate PDF, and I didn't look to see if Ford has it, but I know that Stellantis and GM have it, that there's certain language discussed on those strike agreements on back pay, the difference between the strike money that was received by those that were on strike or laid off because of the strike, the difference between that strike money and what their new wages would be as far as back pay. And at least two of our companies are only back paying active workers. Now, that was from the beginning of the strike for those that were on strike and laid off as far as that language. But as far as active workers, it would be October 23rd forward, so long as the agreements are ratified by November 17th. So I would say that if that strike agreement language was holding up the contracts, that would be an agreement to end the strike and send everybody back to work before ratification.
Well, my thing is this. If the company's making record global profits in the billions and they're being subsidized on a local, state, and federal level, and then you look at how many of the products that are being built in foreign countries with GM, Ford, and Stellantis, and then they're telling us that we have to be viable and competitive with foreign labor markets, when you're paying these people pesos a day, how are we supposed to be viable and competitive with that? And why are we responsible for being viable and competitive when the rest of the upper management is not being viable and competitive?
You just answered your own question when you said something about global markets. Why are we settling for North American only profits when they're making global profits? We are now a global company, not a North American company.
Right.
Okay, so your profits in China, you're making on cheap labor and whatnot, selling your cars at GM and whatnot. Okay, we're a global company now, not North America. We used to just be predominantly North America. We didn't sell anything other than Opel and everything else GM owned, Kia and whatnot, didn't make profits when GM owned them. Now all of a sudden they're making record profits in these countries.
But if Stellantis is building the Dodge, say the Dodge Ram in Mexico, and they're shipping it over here to the United States, is not lowering the cost for the consumer, even though the company's getting cheap labor costs over there in Mexico, and then we're told that we have to be viable and competitive with those workers in Mexico.
Right. And logistics of moving those vehicles from one country to another country is expensive.
Oh, yeah, well, why don't we just pay all the illegals coming over $100 and give them a free Dodge Ram to drive across the border. That solves the problem right there.
There you go. There you go. Get them across,
you
right?
You still got to pay the destination fee.
Yeah.
That's what that $1,500 GM voucher is for.
Yeah.
Adrian, I wanted to ask you what your thoughts are on anything to do with the Ford agreement.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, you know, if I was an active member, I would vote no. There's too many. It's like they jumped the gun. If I was an active person and I'm looking at what the tentative agreements were for Stellantis and GM, I'd say, hell no. Why are we getting so little? There's a lot of areas that they're not the same. Why? I give less than a damn about their profits. That is not my concern. My concern was to get every one of those damn concessions back.
Hear, hear.
That our corrupt leadership gave away because they lied to us. And so that is the first thing. The next thing is, yeah, I understand that you all, temps, you deserve more money. You deserve 90 days and hired in. You deserve that. But yet and still, don't you think that you deserve post-retirement health care? So a lot of things there. It's very troubling. You know, and I'm really with Brian about this bonus to the retirees. That shouldn't be a bonus. Why should we be taxed at that higher rate? You end up with damn near nothing.
Yep, every time.
You know, and I want to also touch on this buyout. If you are going to retire, ask for the papers. You don't have to turn them in. But if you have the papers already, and if this gets ratified November the 17th, you can turn your papers in after ratification.
You're here.
You have to be 6 months out on those retirement papers. So you would say December, January, February, March, April, May. So I want to retire in May. That'll help to qualify you for that $50,000 if you had already planned on retiring. But don't retire for that $50,000 because that's no money. But
no.
Those are my thoughts.
Thank you, Adrian.
Right.
I appreciate that.
And thank you,
hey,
Jesse.
Brian. Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome,
yeah.
Brian. So, touching base on what Adrian just talked about, because I was hoping she'd bring it up. Do you remember the union sister that reached out to you last year and during the general election time, late October, and you actually had posted on your platform page that she had, you know, considered putting in for her retirement for the end of the year, and she actually, I think she was about to put in her papers, and then she found out through, I think she was from Stellantis too, and she found out that if she would have put in her retirement papers before the end of the year, that there was language, I think, for Stellantis that she forfeited her profit-sharing check. Do you know if that language is still carried over into the new tentative agreement for those that might retire? Okay.
No, I don't.
I just wanted to bring that up because I remember that lady. That was a
story worth remembering. technically they should get it because the profit sharing is always a year behind. So right. I believe they would still get their profit sharing check, depending on how many months they retire after the year.
Okay.
So don't quote me on that, but
right.
It's based on hours, the profit
hours
share.
Work. Yep.
Yes, and because when I retired, I received a profit sharing check the following year based on the hours that I had worked. So I had
right.
worked January, February, and March. So I got, you know, profit sharing for that time.
Right. Now, I just remember the lady had come back and said that she found out when she was turning in her papers that she was told that she would not, you know, for the to be retired by the end of 22, that she'd be null and void on getting the profit sharing check for whatever reason. I don't know if there was language specific to Stellantis or whatever, but so I just want to bring that up since you were talking about the $50,000 buyout packages, which still have to get determined even after a ratification vote on how they're going to roll all that out. So that's another thing to consider for all of us that are listening, that there's a lot of things that if we ratify these agreements that are still going to be ongoing negotiations, because again, this is a rush through pass a contract with so much still up for debate, because I looked at a something that was from October 24th. I do want to, I believe it was the first and only communication from Vice President Mike Booth regarding the subsystems portion of the negotiations, that they were still so far apart. That was October 24th, but October 30th, we had a tentative agreement. Make it make sense. So there's a lot that's going to be negotiated, I believe, long after a ratification of the contract, which still, like Brian has said and other people have said, that means it's a living agreement. So anything can go, and that's not going to be language that we find. It's going to be language interpreted and you find out on the fly. What's that?
It does state in there. It does state in there that it is a living agreement.
For GM, I was trying to look for it today. What page is that on?
I can't. I'm not at my notes right now, so I couldn't tell you. But
yeah.
I did see it, and I will let you know what that is. Somebody also brought up about EV. Now I know GM when they did their little live on Saturday, he was touting about Lordstown and, you know, people being able to go back to Lordstown because it's going to be part of the EV program. Does anybody remember what Mary Barra and GM basically put out there about the EVs? They basically stated that they don't see the big market for it, so they're going to kind of put it on the back burner. They're still going to pursue it, but just really not real progressively. Why would you want to go back to a town if you've reestablished yourself someplace else and have the uncertainty of that plant remaining open? In the GM contract, they have dedicated three plants. They have dedicated Fairfax, Tonawanda, and Lansing, I think it's Lansing Grand River, to EV. Those are probably the next plants closing if they are actually backing down on the EV. That's my thought, my process, you know, my assumption. They're not intending on pursuing the EV as passionately as they were 6 months ago, or implied as 6 months ago. So why would you want to even put your eggs in the basket of the EV?
Ground Zero is another one.
Yes, they're postponing that until after they just took back hundreds and hundreds of people, I know, because our plant was affected on a lot of people going back to whatever you call it, Plant Zero, Ground Zero, whatever it is. But, yeah, Detroit Hamtramck, they took back a bunch of people that ended up getting displaced in 2019 and during the contract before it was in the 2015 contract prior to the 2019 contract. And anyway, a lot of them have gone back since the beginning of September And then since we've had these negotiations going on, GM halted and stepped back on the EV production for the trucks and stated that they're postponing it until sometime at the end of 2025.
I heard there's going to be big layoffs at River Rouge.
You know, I heard the same thing. When I say heard, I think we saw it in articles.
What's that?
Bob just told me to say that if 60% of these new hires vote for this, they can no longer blame this contract on you people, the legacy workers.
Right.
Because they voted the shit in. So they have no one to blame but themselves now.
It ain't just the legacy workers that are supporting this. I've talked to a lot of Tier 1 people that they just want to get out and retire because they got theirs, and they don't care neither. There's a lot of them supporting this.
Right. Wow. And that's a problem to me.
Well, Jesse, remember when you asked me about the temporary workers? Force is still going to have temporary workers. Still TPTs and TFTs, whatever. It's going to take them 9 months.
Part-time temporary workers and full-time.
Yeah.
So my question for you and Adrian on that was the same for Brian, but because you guys are both Ford and you guys have been looking at the contract, Brian's Stellantis, and we already know our GM language wrapped on that. The part-time temporary workers for GM, there's no limit on how many. There's no limit on how long they can be kept part-time temps, as well as there is a defined $21 an hour wage as the new starting wage, and that is the only wage you get as a part-time. You don't get raises as a part-time after the resignation if you get hired as part-time temp. So
there's still tiers, though, right, you know, with that?
Correct.
TFTs and there's TPTs?
It's temporary full-time and then part-time.
Right. So it's still a tier situation. They didn't get rid of it.
And there's still language for in progression.
Yes, there is. And it's going to take them 9 months if you're a TFT to work your way up to full-time.
Right.
So
what we have is our chairman was one of the negotiators, and he said, yes, $21 is like the $16.67 that they had, and there's no limit how long someone can be a PTT. Somebody asked him a specific question. Are all temps being converted to full-time temporary after 9 months, not hired after 9 months of full-time temporary, unless all PTT are being converted to FTT. Thanks. We don't need any more of that. PTT have to wait for an offer to become full-time temporary. There is not a contractual timeline for that. You can remain a part-time temporary indefinitely. Obviously, he doesn't want to let that happen with the size of our temp pool and the availability of jobs that our members being part-time temporaries 2 to 3 years before full-time temporary offers are made to them. Once full-time temporary, after 9 months of that status, previously 1 year, you get converted. But he's saying that you can remain a part-time temporary indefinitely. That means, like Bob and all y'all said, there's no wage progression. You're stuck at $21 an hour. I want the part-time temporaries to hear this. You could possibly be stuck in limbo. While everybody else is getting a wage increase, you don't.
Okay, so
have
that's
really
one thing. So Brian,
temporary part-time position, because temporary part-time, those were the Monday, Friday, vacation and medical replacements.
Yep.
They came in at the top wage of whatever area that they were in. They stayed at that. but they only work so many days a week unless they were a medical replacement, really. And then they could shift them around.
Right.
So they didn't have to give them 40 hours a week.
No.
So
no.
I don't know what the real language is on the temporary part-time.
Okay.
Because that $21, I believe that applies to the temporary full time, the one that's going to become full time.
Mm-hmm. I would assume so too. Like, don't quote me.
Yeah,
on
that temporary part time person is not included in that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, but I
don't think so either.
Don't hold me to that, but.
Okay.
Well,
I have a question
for
Terry and Brian too. When you're done, Adrian.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Regarding...
I'm done.
No.
Okay. The question is, in the past for GM, but I want to know if it's current for Ford and Stellantis. When you are hired full time seniority, meaning all these members that are getting hired upon ratification to receive full benefits. In our past contract, 2019 contract, and even before that, I've been hired in. It's 3 years before you're considered vested under the contract by the companies, which means your 401k contributions by the company, you're not vested until you have 3 years of full-time seniority service. Does that stand with Stellantis as well as Ford? And is that carried language into the new contracts, meaning that you don't have rights to that 401k when you retire contributions until you have 3 years of vested service?
That I don't know. I'm going to have to get back to you on that because I honestly don't, but that is a good question. I've been digging through the crossed out language so much and looking to where, you know, I'm like, where's the other part of that? You know what I mean? I mean, I'm saying, why did you take that out and not put anything back in there?
Those funds are not available to you that the company puts into that 401k for 10 years.
Yeah, that's what I thought. 10 years fully vested is what I was
it's
under.
10 years. And then, but what you put in there is available. At least that's
the
way it works.
But is the company, when they do that with that 401k, are they going to put it in a fund that you can't put your hands on? Are they going to put it in a fund that you can't touch? Is my question. Wherever you contribute to your money, wherever, if you do contribute your own money, let's say, can you touch that money when you need it that the company puts in? And what funds are they putting that in for sure is my question.
So I read something. I've been doing so much reading. Like Brian said, you can get easily confused when you're trying to read three tentative agreements. But this wasn't necessarily in the tentative agreements that I was reading. But just within last week, I saw something that was in regards to this, Carrie, and it talked about what the company puts into the 401k you cannot access to borrow from, but if you've contributed into that 401k, yes, you can access that based on guidelines, whatever the guidelines are. You can access that money if you needed to do like a 401k loan. But don't hold me on that. That's something that I read very recently.
The other thing is you cannot invest the money that the company puts in your 401k the way you want. You can't touch it. You can only invest your money the way you want.
I also read that too, so apparently we're on to the same page of some of this. So, yeah, I just read
that.
So,
if the economy ends up taking a dump like it did back in 2008 and 2009, everything that the company contributes to your 401k could be, you can end up like Enron and Kmart where you end up losing that portion of your 401k.
Right. And the 401k's
for the Tier 2 is being capped at 40 hours, even though a lot of these employees, our brothers and sisters, are forced to work 6 days a week. Your 401k is capped at 40 hours.
And not just that, you're not going to get the max on the match of the 401k through the company until you reach full wages.
Right.
And, Brian, we are at the Rouge. We are laying people off temporarily. We're, that EV situation is not a good one.
I heard it was going to be about 800 jobs that are coming from the River Rouge that are going to get.
Well, they've got a smart surplus now. They have a smart surplus. This is the first time I've ever seen that surplus at the Rouge. So they're telling us basically we have a choice where we can transfer to Michigan Truck, or what is it, MAP, Michigan Assembly Plant, that makes the Broncos and the Rangers. They're going to put another shift back. So they're saying that we could possibly, you know, it's still, you know, I still got questions myself. I'm going to one of those meetings. So you could go over there because we're now surplus. Or we could go down to the EV plant that is not even up yet. It will not be ready for until 2025 from the last time I looked. You can go down there. But, see, I'm reading through all this language about transferring down there and transferring over to Michigan Assembly, because the other thing is, if you do decide to transfer over to Michigan Assembly, are they going to just stick you, let's say, in the assembly side? Or are they going to let you go to work available in that complex? You know, there's a, I think there's a body, there's a paint shop. I don't know. I think they got a stamping plant there.
The other thing is, we can strike on plant closures, but there's nothing in there for layoffs. And my thing is, if you end up getting laid off and picked up somewhere else, you're going to start off with day one seniority, and you could end up getting laid off again and never getting picked back up.
Well, this is something Aiden and I talked about, too. Because if you transfer out of your complex, your unit, Aiden, what was that? Because your seniority won't, some of your seniority won't go with you. Aiden, remember us talking about
you retain all your company seniority for retirement, but
right.
When you transfer out of your local, you are supposed to go into another facility as day one.
That's correct.
So at our local,
every now and then, depending on how these transfers are going, they'll send people from other locals. And they come in with all their seniority. So that's something you have to watch out for. And you have to also, I would think that you would have to do a grievance. And it would be good to get as many people as you could to go on a grievance if that occurs.
At our local specifically, because we know that seniority rights and stuff to do with seniority outside of your corporate seniority are pretty much negotiated on the local levels. At our local, transferring to that plant, you keep your corporate seniority. You do have a start date at the plant, but your seniority rights when you transfer to the plant remain your company's seniority rights. So when you put in for jobs, bid on jobs and other things like that, your corporate seniority is what stands in our plant. And that's per our local contract. And
so my question is, are they going to lay off, are they going to canvass an order by seniority through the plant or by department?
Well, that's a good question because I'm still reading through that because some of that is real screwy, too. Because I've never been to a plant that's surplus. I've never been, you know, so I've been more busy reading about that and trying to understand that. Because are you going to take the low in the EV or are you going to go by seniority for transfer? Because some of these people are going to get laid off because they were talking like they were thinking they're not going to add on. We used to have three shifts in final, right? Our final building. They took all the low seniority people and moved them over to that Rev C building, right? So then they eliminated a full shift out of our final building. So they're not adding back on a shift over in the final building. So you got all these low seniority people at the rep building. But I would assume they're going to start laying those people off because those trucks aren't selling.
Wow, you made everybody quiet.
Can I interject really quick? Jesse, earlier when you were talking about the language, something that Adrian said last week is so true. You need to have your last local agreement or your last national agreement with you because all they have posted is changed pages. They have not posted language that was not changed. So language that wasn't changed is going to be found in your last national agreement. So when you're asking some of those questions, you go back to your national agreement to find out what was not changed to figure it out.
Yeah, but that agreement is null and void. Really?
Not necessarily. Not really, because they're using that as the base. They're using that as the foundation of this agreement. And that's what these changed pages are. These changed pages are the pages that they are changing from the last national agreement.
And a lot of it is marked out from that agreement.
But what I'm saying is there's parts that they're not even showing you that are not marked out. The only thing they are showing you are the pages that they changed. There are a considerable amount of pages in that national contract that have not even been touched. And that language will still stand when this contract is ratified.
Right. Correct.
They use the pre-existing contract as a template. That's all they did.
Well, I'm seeing not a lot of language on those EVs, those EV plants either. So it's...
Because they don't exist yet.
I don't know. Right.
They don't exist yet. They're building an existing plant. You don't have battery plants up and running that are 100% yet. So that's all language in the works.
Yeah. Crazy.
How can you be in the works? How do you have a tentative agreement and something is still in the works?
Well, if you don't have a plant open, how do you unionize it? Tell me that.
Well, even the analysts question that and during the negotiations.
They have always put in the appendix future stuff. It's in the MOUs even.
Yes.
Let me interrupt real quick. We're going to go to 9:30 since they're letting us stay on. So we're going to go ahead and go to 9:30 if they'll let us. And Adrian, before we get off, I want you to tell people, to remind them about their $150 deal they got to get sent in by the new year. Okay.
Got to December 31st. The over-the-counter products for the retirees to spend your $150 for this year. In January, it goes up to $200. But right now, don't forget, you've got $150 that you can use on the over-the-counter products. You can find that under UAW.org and just go up to the search engine and put in OTC, and it should come up for you.
That PSA was brought to you by the Factory Whistle Show.
And don't call them Medicare phone numbers on TV. Do not call them.
Here.
Hey, Adrian, real quick, since you're talking about...
Somebody call your benefit rep.
Hey, Adrian, I actually have a question for you for retirees that was actually asked by one of our union brothers. George Fries actually sent something to me today. He said, I heard that they changed retirees' optical. I can't find it. If you see it, send it to me. Are you aware of anything to do with optical changing for retirees?
No, the last I knew is that it was Browns. But I can make a phone call tomorrow and ask the person at my local that will give me that information.
Okay, if you do find out anything, can you pass along to George?
Sure.
Another interruption. Two things. Scott, do you know a Gerald Krosno, Kuzno from Chattanooga that called in years ago about the UAW contract they were, you know, pushing down there? You remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, he just emailed me. He still listens to the show. He said, don't bring that crap down here. And that's all he said. I don't remember him. I don't, but he said...
There was him, another individual, and then there was the married couple, remember?
Yeah, there was a married couple, right. I remember that, but I don't remember Gerald Krosno, Kuzno. C-R-O-S-S-N-O-E. Krosno or something, I don't know. Anyway, Gerald, thank you for listening, and they'll be bringing this crap to you, so be ready.
Adrian.
Yeah.
So, Adrian.
Oh, wait. I got 90 seconds. The lady says, if you want to call in, you better do it now. 90 seconds. And call in. You don't have to push one or anything. Just call in. You can listen. I don't know if you can still listen. In a minute in the chat room. I do not know. So call in if you want. Continue on, ladies.
So the other big issue is now Ford split the combustibles and the EVs, the ICE, and the EVs into two different companies. So that's now going to be another whole issue.
Well, you know, I've been preaching this for years. Renegotiate the contract is a no-no. Not a ratified contract. And so this is part of the plan. I can't say it any plainer than what I've been saying. Because you don't have this stuff set aside, because they do that. They set stuff aside for future. And if you don't see this, so why would you give permission to anybody to have all your power? And they go and make deals that they didn't bring before you to say if you want this or not. That's all I can say about that. But I remember how alternative works schedules came about. It wasn't in a tentative agreement. It was in the back of the book in one of them appendix that they talked about it for the future. And then all of a sudden, they that came up with the ABC crew. And everybody was trying to figure, what the hell is this? But that's how they do it.
Oh, boy.
You know, we just want people to be
educated,
of service to us. That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to set aside what the company wants. That's not what they're there to bargain for. You're there to negotiate for us, the members. And it seems to me a lot of times our negotiators forget that.
The UAW is a company within a company.
Oh, yeah. The UAW believes that they're a corporation like the companies.
Right. They want to make profits,
well,
too, instead of giving them to you. That's why they want to organize plants that don't exist yet. That's why they want Toyota, Honda, and Tesla to get on board, because more union dues is more money in the coffers.
Yeah. I don't see anything if we don't get some people that are going to, I don't know. I don't see really anything changing in the next contract. It's still going to be the same thing.
Oh, the next contract probably be worse.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it's going to go downhill as far as automotive and part suppliers. Because, you see, it's not going to be that many.
Right. I kind of feel sorry for the people that hired in after 07 because, I mean, let's face it, for 16 years, they've been trying to get on the pension plan here. So they've seen, they're stuck right there in the middle in a very peculiar spot.
Okay.
So you have to remember, some of them did get into the pension plan. Remember they had a cutoff?
Yeah, my sister was one of them.
And basically, you know, you were fortunate if you just happened to be in that group with the friends and family.
They can't hear you, Bob.
Poor Bob.
She said,
he catches no, no matter what happened.
He said October 2007 was the last cutoff.
Right.
Where's Bob?
My sister hired him.
Little darling, where is Bob? Where's Bob? Ooh, little darling, where is Bob? It's nice to meet you, but honey, where's Bob?
Where the hell is Bob?
I finally got a chance to date the prom queen.
Okay. That would need a little laugh in there.
I thought you were about to start music for a hoedown.
Well, we could do that.
That's my time to go to work song.
We can do that. We know where Bob is now. All right. Fun's over. Continue on with this depressing talk.
Well,
I didn't mean to put everybody to sleep. Wake up.
No.
You know, I was hired in, Don, as a temp. Okay. When I signed on that dotted line for a job, I knew what my potential was. I knew what my future was. I signed on the dotted line for the potential future I thought I could have. So
right.
These people thinking they're entitled than what I took a chance on, because I took a pay cut, a benefit cut, every kind of cut you can imagine. You come to work for GM at the time because I looked at my possible future.
Right.
Okay. I don't owe anybody anything. I made my own decision. They made their decision when they came here with the same hope. Because for them to sit here and think that they're entitled to what I have, let the cards fall where they may, because I took the same chance. We all take a leap of faith in life.
Right.
Okay. So I hope it works out. I hope our bargainers work it out for them. I hope they get what I deserve, you know, what they deserve, and I, what I deserve too, because, you know,
right.
I have what they will never have. Okay, so I get tired of listening to, like, I'm blamed for their predicament, and I'm blamed for what they don't have. How about saying thank you for what we've given them, a job, because they had no future without us. And I'm tired of the whining and then the backstabbing for people that you're trying to help.
Well, after a while, you get a little tired.
Yeah.
You get a little tired. I mean, we've been at this for quite a while, trying to educate and tell you some of our experiences that we went through, and it just doesn't seem like it soaks through. They still want to play the blame game, and it's like, oh my goodness, you cannot be to a point that you're listening to certain people, but you won't read.
Right.
You won't read. You don't try to get an understanding. You know, and it's it gets very tiresome.
You know, when this all started,
and I don't want to be negative.
You know what my biggest concern was, and this tells you something. My biggest concern was I felt the retirees, and I'm not retired. I can't retire for another 4 to 5 years. I thought the retirees got screwed more than anybody out there. And you know something? The biggest thing I wanted out of this contract is for them to get back what they lost in a raise. Because you know something? They deserve it more than I do. They worked their 30 years. They completed their term of service. And they got screwed. And how quickly these people forget where they came from, whether it was their grandfather, grandmother, or anybody else.
Yeah.
But Thane carries his grandfather's paycheck stub with him. Remember that.
Well,
I've seen my father's. I've seen my father's paycheck stub and what he started out as, even in skilled trades. And I saw what he started out on the floor. And I'll tell you what, it was under $2 an hour back then.
Yep, $1.68.
Yeah, I think my pocket was a little lower than that even.
My dad started at 56, I believe. So, yeah, it was a lot lower than that. I think it was when he made skilled trades, it was $1.85 an hour in skilled trades.
Mm-hmm. Yep. My dad hired in 68. It was $1.68 an hour.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask everybody something. So let's say we get past this whole, you know, tentative agreement. What do you think the first thing Sean Fain should do after this? After
resign.
What should his new project be?
He needs to resign.
Because he ain't going to
okay.
do better.
Well, I'm saying, like, do you think he needs to look at that constitution and look at where we fell short here or bylaws?
So bad, Malcolm.
He knows what's in that constitution. He's not stupid.
And it's going to be a while, too. Go ahead, Melissa.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
He's in that. He knows what's in that Constitution. He's not stupid. He's intelligent.
I know he knows what's in there, but I'm saying.
How can you look?
What
do
you guys? Well, all that fluff and buff, right? Hey, dang. Wow. What choice did? Okay, were you gotta, if you had one member, one vote, Brian didn't win. So here's my question. What choice did we all have as far as did we want to go back to what we had, true dictatorship, or give a chance on somebody else? I mean, we really didn't have a choice,
question.
In my mind.
When you're talking about that, having a choice, the person at the top doesn't make the choice. You need to wipe out the whole slate. And unfortunately, it ain't going to happen. You're always going to, even as a committeeman on the floor, or as an alternate, you're only as good as the people that support you, your shop chairman, your zone man, and whatnot. They can make or break you. Okay? So unless you wipe it all clear and you get people in there that maybe don't know shit, but are willing to put in the time and the aggravation to hold people accountable, you're not going to change it. Okay, it's just like our Congress. You get the same bullshit recycled over and over again. And it doesn't matter who's at the top. Unless you change the lower level members to control the purse strings and control what he has a vote on, it's not going to change. And unfortunately, you could take 8 of us and put us in there that maybe don't know everything they know, don't know all the political bullshit, ain't kissing anybody's ass, and that's the only way you're going to make change. But you can't beat a race rig no matter who's at the top. Boy, it got quiet.
Yes,
it did.
Quiet.
I mean,
Don,
everybody,
you got an answer?
We
got to think past this whole issue of where we're at now. Because, I mean, unfortunately, it is what it is, obviously, you know?
If you don't have the membership waking up and seeing what's going on, and you don't have a revolution per se,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be the same old business as usual. You can have one person wanting to change. You can have one person wanting to change the world, but unless he's got nuclear capability, it ain't going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I can agree with that.
It's a cold hard fact of life. You know, I mean, unfortunately, and like I said, I could take 8 of us that reach points, and we want to inform the membership. We want them to make a logical decision. But one, if they don't want to listen, or two, they're complacent, and three, they're happy with the crumbs they're getting, then you can't change it. You can't show them potential they never thought existed.
Right.
And your leadership is going to keep pushing what you have and what we managed to get for you, and it's the best we can do bullshit, and these people are going to fall in line because they're sheep. They're not the fighters of the past. They're not our forefathers. They don't want to be our forefathers. Most children of parents now, or not. They're still living at home at 30-something years old. They don't want to go out on their own and take the good with the bad. You know, I mean, I don't know how to change a system that is so fixed, no matter who's at the top.
Well, I can say one thing, too, about a lot of this and going through this labor movement right now and being a UAW member, Frankly, I'm sick and tired of Walter Reuther's name being misused to push agendas through our organization. If you're going to preach Walter, if you're going to preach Walter Reuther, start delivering like he did for everybody.
I kind of look at it like this also. The only way you can hurt the UAW, unfortunately, is by dropping out of the UAW and taking their union dues away. And maybe if you had 25,000 workers at GM, Ford, and Chrysler say, screw you, we're not happy, because you still get union representation. Maybe that's the only way to hurt them is by their pocketbook. But unfortunately, that hurts the cause also.
Well, in January, we are no longer, here in Michigan, we are no longer right to work. So what will probably happen is that we'll go back to having closed shops here. But one of the things that I truly noticed, because just like you said, Walter Reuther, I can't stand to hear you say Martin Luther King or Malcolm X either, because apparently you really don't know what they really stood for. But irregardless to that, until we get people that are truly dedicated to servicing, see, that's the problem. They don't really have the real honor of being a service to the people. They want to service their particular group of people. You have to be a service to everybody, but yet and still, you know, nothing's 100%. But what we're experiencing right now, they're doing us a disservice.
Well,
hopefully
being a General
Motors.
Go ahead.
No, Don, I'm through.
No, I was just, like you said, you're retired from Ford. If you were an active worker, you would vote no. And if I was an active worker at General Motors, after hearing and looking and reading, I would vote no, too. Now, you all go and read comments. What's the comments like? Are they pro or a con?
Mixed. It's mixed. Yeah, it's mixed. And I think like Scott was saying, these contracts are being incentivized by money that can be controlled by the corporations based on your status. The division in the contract that's created in the contract, the division of status, the bulk of the money is going towards the lowest seniority. And again, it's not about being ungrateful about somebody jumping $11 an hour. We are trying to raise and lift all tides to be equal wages, but the tiers exist, and we demanded tiers to end, and we're in multiple contracts after multi-billion profit over the last 15 years coming out of these bankruptcies. And we also have had a president who has stated too many times now that they have data supporting that the corporations are very much well to afford the demands that were asked, and the bulk of these demands were demands that they were able to afford when they had less record profits than what they've had in the last 15 years. Not only that, but the amount of membership has dropped. The jobs have been killed off tremendously since pre-bankruptcy when they were profiting and had all these things. So it's just more to give to stock buybacks and dividends and other things like that. And shuffling money around for incentives is what I see this to be.
It's a shell game, and what really needs to be happen is we need to go back to 2003, 2007. You need to restore these employees all the way up from the past to the current. That's what needs to happen, and we're not restoring nobody. We're not restoring the pensions. We're not restoring the coal like it should be. Wages. I mean, my goodness, we should be at $45 an hour, $49 an hour right now. I mean, that, I know that sounds like a stretch, but that's, if you go back and take that amount going forward, that's where we should be. But nobody wants to talk about that.
When they say we're going to jeopardize our product and their future, all that is a way of saying, screw you, we're not giving you more money. Because the money's there. They've made $10.2 million in three quarters of GM North America. That's just North America. They made $100 billion worldwide. Okay? So don't bullshit us. $1 billion,
right.
If you invested $1 billion in your workforce tomorrow and brought us up to where we should be, you're still making $9.2 billion. And top
you're here.
At the top is still making her 26.3.
Right.
So, I mean, how much is enough for your shareholders? What constitutes that? Evidently, we're guilty of it because we're shareholders in one aspect, but we don't own any physical paper. We bet on the company to succeed so that we have a future. Unfortunately, we're cutting our own throats in the process.
I don't know if Brian's still on, but when the companies talk about being viable and competitive, the way I see that is the companies are in the 1%. We're in the other leftovers. So the companies want to be viable and competitive with each other while exploiting us and what they feel we don't deserve to make up for that.
Right.
Well, they sure
right.
better figure out how they're going to be viable and competitive. Because that's a company job. That's not our job. Our job is to go in there and get the product, do the product. That's it. We ain't got to do no more of that other bullshit. We're not marketing.
Your keys are in my glove. Yeah.
You're right.
You know,
you're
I
right.
mean, this lie that, okay, because of all of this, these negotiations going on right now, well, I mean, these agreements, oh, they're going to go up on the product. Them bastards went up on the product last year.
Mm-hmm.
They went up on the product the year before that.
Yep.
Yes, it is.
There was no contract year.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
You know, you listen to these foolish-ass economists. Ah, they're just destroying the economy. Now, one day I heard it was $6 point something billion that they were in the hole. The next time, it done went up to $10 point something billion. And it's like, really?
Yeah.
But you have product to sell.
Mm-hmm.
How stupid do you think the consumers are? Because, see, that's who you're playing that for.
What? Is it out in the shed?
Well, probably is. Plus, they make the same amount of vehicles with 10% less the workforce.
Didn't
exactly.
I get an email last week about bitching that the price of vehicles keep going up because of us? And we had to explain to the... I can't remember who wrote it. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, that guy said that.
Ghetto Finger and Morrissey. With the little bow tie, right?
Well, no, yeah. Somebody emailed me with bitching about us getting, or not me, but you guys, active workers, getting all this money and... blaming us for the price of
vehicles
going up every year. And, of course, we had to set him straight about our contract and how much we've lost. But, you know, they will never believe that. It's always the workers' fault.
Hey, Dublin?
Yes?
Are we doing a show tomorrow night?
No, not that I know of. We went 2.5 hours.
I just wanted to make sure.
Okay. Not that I know of. Now, it's up to, you know, you guys. When does GM meet, Scott, in Flint?
We will have Tuesday will be our rollout. And that is third shift. I got to think here for third shift. Third shift is from 8 to 11. And then it's 12 to 3 for the second shift. And then it is 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock for first shift. And what that is in actuality, people who are on second shift, they get the least amount of time because a lot of them got to be to work at 3 o'clock. So they're actually only going to get 2 hours or just a little over 2 hours of time. That's it. And then
split up, though, across three times, Scott. So they actually have the morning, 3-hour morning time window that they could do it, though. So there is it's split up because it's like 8 to whatever, 11, and then 12 to, I think, 3, and then 4
to
7 or something. Yeah.
Right.
But
how many second shift people are going to get up, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning to try to make that. You know what I mean?
Hey, you know what? And that's on Tuesday. And guess what? That's also voting day. So I don't know. I can't remember if the kids have off for school for that. But that was also brought up why they would schedule that. But you know what? In reality, they are providing a time available for everybody. So
right.
Yeah. I mean, if it's important to you and you actually have questions that you believe you're going to get real viable answers to, you know, it's there. It's not like they dropped it on us the day of. But, Don, as far as Flint rollout, the regional rollout meetings for leadership were today in Flint.
Today? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have our rollout will be for us on Tuesday, and then we're going to vote on Thursday the 9th. We're going to vote on the 9th, and it's only for a 12-hour vote. We got over 5,500 people in our plant. We're only doing a 12-hour vote instead of 24 hours.
I don't know why. Well, you know.
And
why.
we have an overflow this time around. We have an alternate location, so we can go vote at the ball fields where there's no cameras. I'm not saying no shenanigans could happen there, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. Didn't somebody that was at International telling the membership not to to make sure you vote no on anything that Sean Fain.
Yeah. Glad you brought that up, because that would be very interesting if that happens, huh?
Yeah. I can't remember the guy. I can't remember his name. Scott, you brought it up. Dice? Deese? It seems like it started with a D.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You might be referring to... let's see, Region 1 Director is Steve Dawes, I believe. Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that's his name. Right. So we'll see. Scott, get with me if you want to do a show. If you think it's worthwhile, we'll do it. So get with me. But
maybe Wednesday? I don't know.
Get with me on it, Scott. We don't have to make a decision like quick, but... get with me on that.
Okay.
And be all right with me. All right, guys.
Well, thank you for going long tonight, Don.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, Brian.
Brian's gone. I see his number just dropped.
Oh, okay. I know that he was on a podcast today with other guests to discuss some of the contracts amongst the big three, the tentative agreement. So I think he's got it in his group, but I might reach out to him and ask him to put it in the factory whistle since that's a public group so everybody can see it. But he was on there at the IBM building in Southfield today at 4 o'clock.
I think George Fry's already did that, I believe. But real quick, everybody attend these meetings and ask questions. Go to your rollout meetings and ask questions. Ask questions about yourself, for yourself and your family. Ask questions about pensions. Ask them about anything that's going to deal with what you're doing, definitely about employment. Go ask questions.
Yes.
There you go.
Even if you get booed, ask it.
I know how that goes.
I know. That's why I said it.
Even if you're a traditional worker, ask about tears. If you're a tear worker, ask about the traditionals. Hold these people accountable to what you were supposed to be, what they went into these negotiations for.
Good night, all. I'm going to work.
All right.
Good night. Be safe.
Y'all be safe. Be safe, and I'll take care of Missy while you're gone.
Good night.
You little devil.
Oh, I'm a stinker. Oh, I'm such a stinker.
You certainly are. You are, and I love it.
Oh, well, you all be careful. Be safe. We'll probably talk to you all sometime during the week, so stay with us. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, John.
Good night.
Boy. Good night. Mama, what are you doing on top of Daddy? Oh, my God, you're fighting again, John Boy. Mary Lou or whatever in the hell her name was. Good night, everybody.